Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to From the Vault, our weekly series that brings our history out of the vault and onto the radio. This week on From the Vault, we take a look at the last great literary revolution in America by presenting the Beat Poets of San Francisco.
Everybody looks everywhere. It's a jazz joint and Beat Generation mad trick. You see someone, hi, then you look away elsewhere for something, someone else. It's all insane. Then you look back, you look away, around. Everything is coming in from everywhere in the sound of the jazz. Hi, hey, bang, the little drummer takes a solo.
This documentary, produced in 1979 by KPFA and Berkeley producers Lily Franklin and Michael Yoshida, on the occasion of KPFA's 30th year anniversary, we'll hear from rare recordings of Jack Kerouac, Allen Ginsberg, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, Lenny Bruce, Kenneth Rexroth, and many others that helped shape the Beat Generation. We'll also hear a special conversation with From the Vault producer Joanne Griffith and Worcester English professor Nancy Grace on the origins and the legacy of the Beat Poets. But first, let's begin with Jack Kerouac from the Pacifica program, The Beat Poets of San Francisco.
In my medicine cabinet, the winter fly has died of old age. Well, here I am, 2 p.m. What day is it? The tree looks like a dog barking at heaven.
The trouble with the printed word is, it is so silent. Let poetry return to its first purpose, the oral message. Let there be a law against writing poetry. It should be spoken, then recorded.
Prayer beads on the holy book. My knees are cold.
Jack Kerouac reading blues and haikus with Zoot Sims on sax and Lawrence Ferlinghetti with aphorisms on poetry. This is a retrospective on the San Francisco Beat scene of the late 50s, on the poets and the jazz they loved. We'll hear more from rare recordings of Kerouac and other poets who experimented with a jazz backup for their readings. Jack Kerouac's publication of On the Road in 1956 was a momentous event for the literary scene and the American public. Written about the late 40s and early 50s, it crystallized a vision of the Beat Generation, spinning a tale of mad trips from coast to coast, of New York and San Francisco dives, late-night jazz, reefer, and dreams to replace the disillusionment with America. Kerouac himself is the one to tell us what was meant by the Beat.
Now it's jazz. The place is roaring. All beautiful girls in there. One mad brunette at the bar, drunk with her boys. One strange chick I remember from somewhere, wearing a simple skirt with pockets, her hands in there. Short haircut, slouched, talking to everybody. Up and down the stairs they come. The bartenders are the regular band of Jack and the heavenly drummer who looks up in the sky with blue eyes, with a beard. He's wailing beer caps of bottles and jamming at the cash register, and everything is going to the beat. It's the Beat Generation. It's Bayat. It's the beat to keep. It's the beat of the heart. It's being beat and down in the world and like old-time lowdown. And like in ancient civilizations, the slave boatmen rowing galleys to a beat and servants spinning pottery to a beat. The faces. There's no face to compare with Jack Mingers, who's up on the bandstand now with a colored trumpeter who outblows him wild and dizzy, but Jack's face overlooking all the heads and smoke. He has a face that looks like everybody you've ever known and seen on the street in your time. Sweet face. Hard to describe. Sad eyes, cruel lips, expectant gleam, swaying to the beat. Tall, majestical. Waiting in front of the drugstore. A face like Hunky's in New York. Hunky, whom you'll see on Times Square, somnolent and alert. Sad, sweet, dark, holy. Just out of jail. Martyred. tortured by sidewalks, starved for sex and companionship, open to anything, ready to introduce a new world with a shrug. The colored big tenor with the big tone is blowing sunny stits clear out of Kansas City roadhouses. Clear, heavy, somewhat dull and unmusical ideas which nevertheless never leave the music. Always there, always far out. The harmony too complicated for the motley bums of music understanding in there. But the musicians here. The drummer is a sensational 12-year-old Negro boy who's not allowed to drink, but can play. Tremendous, a little lithe, childlike Miles Davis kid. Like early Fats Navarro fans you used to see in Espan Harlem, hep, small. He thunders at the drums with a beat which is described to me by a near-standing connoisseur with beret as a fabulous beat. On piano is Blondie Bill, good enough to drive any group. Now Jack Minger blows out and over his head with these angels from Fillmore. I dig him. Now he's terrific. I just stand in the outside hall against the wall. No beer necessary, with collections of in-and-out listeners, with Bernie, and now here returns Bob Berman, who is a kid from West Indies, who barged into my party 6 months earlier with Dean and the gang, and I had a Chet Baker record on, and we hoofed it at each other in the room. Tremendous. The perfect grace of his dancing, casual, like Joe Louis, casually hoofing. He comes now in dancing like that, glad. Everybody looks everywhere. It's a jazz joint and Beat Generation mad trick. You see someone, hi. Then you look away elsewhere for something, someone else. It's all insane. Then you look back, you look away, around. Everything is coming in from everywhere in the sound of the jazz. Hi. Hey. Bang. The little drummer takes a solo, reaching his young hands all over traps and kettles and cymbals and foot pedal. Boom. And a fantastic crash of sound. 12 years old. What will happen?
Writing in the 70s, poet Lou Welch says, since 1959, all kinds of things have happened to me. What was the Beat Generation is now down to a few survivors, each of whom went his only way. Most of us are gone, as so many makers go early, into prisons, loony bins, penthouses, graves, and the other silences of whatever desperation. It has been no different for us than for any other generation. Witness Rex Roth's poem, The Death of Dylan Thomas, where he lists the victims he loved who lost. Then counter this, or any other, with a list of poets, painters, dancers, musicians who lived beyond their 40th year. Kerouac was one of those poets who died young. Here, in tribute to him, is Allen Ginsberg reading Sunflower Sutra.
I walked on the banks of the Tin Can Banana Dock and sat down under the huge shade of a Southern Pacific locomotive to look at the sunset over the Box House Hills and cry. Jack Kerouac sat beside me on a busted, rusty iron pole, companion. We thought the same thoughts of the soul, bleak and blue and sad-eyed, surrounded by the gnarled steel roots of trees of machinery. The oily water on the river mirrored the red sky. Sun sank on top of final Frisco peaks. No fish in that stream. No hermit in those mounts, just ourselves, roomy-eyed and hungover like old bums on the riverbank, tired and wily. Look at the sunflower, he said. There was a dead gray shadow against the sky, big as a man, sitting dry on top of a pile of ancient sawdust. I rushed up enchanted. It was my first sunflower. Memories of Blake, my visions, Harlem, and hells of the eastern rivers, bridges clanking Joe's greasy sandwiches, dead baby carriages, black treadless tires forgotten and unretreaded, the poem of the riverbank, condoms and pots, steel knives, nothing stainless, only the dank muck and the razor-sharp artifacts passing into the past, and the gray sunflower poised against the sunset, crackly, bleak, and dusty with the smut and smog and smoke of olden locomotives in its eye. Corolla of bleary spikes pushed down and broken like a battered crown. Seeds fallen out of its face. Soon to be toothless mouth of sunny air. Sun rays obliterated on its hairy head like a dried wire spider web. Leaves stuck out like arms out of the stem. Gestures from the sawdust root. Broke pieces of plaster fallen out of the black twigs. A dead fly in its ear. Unholy, battered old thing you were. My sunflower, oh my soul, I loved you then. The grime was no man's grime, but death in human locomotives. All that dress of dust, that veil of darkened railroad skin, that smog of cheek, that eyelid of black misery, that sooty hand or phallus or protuberance of artificial worse than dirt, industrial, modern, all that civilization spotting your crazy golden crown, and those blear thoughts of death and dusty, loveless eyes and ends and withered roots below in the home pile of sand and sawdust, rubber dollar bills, skin of machinery, the guts and innards of the weeping, coughing car, the empty, lonely tin cans with their rusty tongues, alack, what more could I name? The smoked ashes of some cock cigar, the cunts of wheelbarrows and the milky breasts of cars, all these entangled in your mummied roots. And you there, standing before me in the sunset, all your glory in your form, a perfect beauty of a sunflower, a perfect, excellent, lovely sunflower existence, a sweet natural eye to the new hip moon, woke up alive and excited, grasping in the sunset, shadow, sunrise, golden, monthly breeze. How many flies buzzed round you, innocent of your grime, while you cursed the heavens of the railroad and your flower soul? Poor dead flower, when did you forget you were a flower? When did you look at your skin and decide you were an impotent, dirty old locomotive? The ghost of a locomotive, the specter and shade of a once powerful, mad American locomotive? You were never no locomotive, sunflower. You were a sunflower. And you, locomotive, you are a locomotive. Forget me not. So I grabbed up the skeleton-thick sunflower and stuck it at my side like a scepter and deliver my sermon to my soul and Jack's soul too and anyone who'll listen. We are not our skin of grime. We're not dread, bleak, dusty, imageless locomotive. We're beautiful sunflowers inside, blessed by our own seed, and golden, hairy, naked accomplishment bodies, growing into mad, black, formal sunflowers in the sunset, spied on by our eyes, under the shadow of the mad locomotive riverbank, sunset, Frisco, hilly, tin can, evening, sit-down vision.
In the morning frost, the cats step slowly. No telegram today, only more leaves fell. Oh, he was quite racy. Real estate queen. Europe and Niles. For pleasure. Stomp, stomp, absolute rays making noise. I can write about them, but I can't punctuate them. Then he said, comma, comma, comma. That skinny guy with black hair. Atlean rage. In India in the last year, he's getting even, ignoring all common publications and getting Urdu nothing Sanskrit by Sir Yak 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 40-page thing Norfolk. Let's all get drunk. I want to take pictures. Don't miss with Mrs. Lately and trust picture pitcher pithy lisp. That's an artistic kit for sex. Trying to think of a rule in Sanskrit, mama Sanskrit sounding, obviously twins coming in here, Meltown, Equinel, Myopa, Pate, Watacha, Pimana, Kawaya. You get sticky ring weekends. And wash the tub, bub. I'll be gentle like a lamb in the Bible. Beautiful color, your lipstick. Thanks, honey. Got a match, Max? Taxi crabs and murder cycles. Let's go to Trilling and ask him. I gotta wash my conduct. Don't worry about nothing. I love Allen Ginsberg. Let that be recorded in heaven's unchangeable heart. Either way, rapples. Call up so-and-so. Who's that? Sui Delia. And there came the picture of Ang Bong the Bila. Wait, wait for something. The bee slime. Then the ants will crawl over bee land. Ants in bands wailing neath my bloody owl pants, owl pants. Tadabadi, he thinks I'm competitive in the long, pleasant souse of wishing all of ye bleed, stay, meditation, everybody martini, destroy my black. Alan, you better voice the stare, this beer, these room sandwiches. Where did you get these, big, greasy socialists? Are you gonna conk, Alan? Mighty tall in the saddle. Anybody got a ciggy boo? The moon is a piece of tea. Under the empty blue sky, vertebrate zoology. Bop began with jazz, but one afternoon somewhere on a sidewalk, maybe 1939, 1940, Dizzy Gillespie or Charlie Parker or Thelonious Monk was walking down past a men's clothing store on 42nd Street or South Main in L.A., and from the loudspeaker they suddenly heard a wild, impossible mistake in jazz that could only have been heard inside their own imaginary head. Is a new art, bop. The name derives from an accident. America was named after an Italian explorer, not after an Indian king. Lionel Hampton had made a record called Hey Bob, Rebop, and everybody yelled it, and it was when Lionel would jump in the audience and wail his saxophone at everybody with sweat claps, jumping fools in the aisles, the drummer vastly booming and belaboring on the stage as the whole theater rocked. Sung by Helen Humes, it was a popular record and sold many copies around 1945 or 46. First, everyone looked around, then it happened. Bop happened. The bird flew in. Minds went in. On the streets, thousands of new type hep cats in red shirts and some goatees and strange queer-looking cowboys from the West with boots and belts. And the girls began to disappear from the street somehow. You no longer saw, as in the 30s, the Wrangler walking with his doll in the honky-tonk. Now he was alone. Rebop, bop.
Rum bop. Bebop and rumba bump and rolled into one. Rum bop. A photogenic caper done on the run. They tried to fly like a midnight rainbow. High in the sky, kicking hot fandango. Then go swish and dish and hip precision. Tropical nuclear jive time fission. Rum bop. Progressive ultrasonic opera stop. Rum bop. Cha-jungle jitterbug possessed all a papa. Born digging those savage squirms. Gone in no uncertain terms. The pretty parts in the heart, the beats and the feet. Rum bop.
Came into being because the girls were leaving the guys and going off to be middle class models or something. And Dizzy or Charlie or Thelonious was walking down the street, heard a noise, a sound, half Lester Young, half raw rainy fog that has that chest-shivering excitement of shack or track or empty lot. The sudden vast tiger head on the wood fence, rainy no-school Saturday morning dump yards. Hey! And rushed off dancing. On the piano that night, Thelonious introduced the wooden off-key note to everybody's warm-up notes. Minton's Playhouse. Evening starts. Jam hours later. 10 p.m. Colored bar and hotel next door. One or two white visitors. Some from Columbia, some from nowhere, some from ships, some from Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, some from Europe. The strange note makes the trumpeter of the band lift an eyebrow. Dizzy is surprised for the first time that day. He puts the trumpet to lips and blows a wet blur. Hee-hee-ha, laughs Charlie Parker, bending down to slap his ankle. He puts his alto to his mouth and says, "Didn't I tell you?" with jazz of notes. Like great poets of foreign languages singing in foreign countries with lyres by seas. And no one understands because the language isn't alive in the land yet. Bop is the language from America's inevitable Africa. Going is sounded like gong. Africa is the name of the flu and kick beat off to one side. the sudden squeak uninhibited that screams muffled at any moment from Dizzy Gillespie's trumpet. Do anything you want. Drawing the tune aside along another improvisation bridge with a reach-out tear of claws, like, why be subtle and false? The band of 10 p.m. Mintons swings into action. Bird Parker, who is only 18 years old, has a crew cut of Africa, looks impossible, has perfect eyes and composures of a king when suddenly you stop and look at him in the subway, and you can't believe that bop is here to stay. Or modern music, call it what you will, that it is real, and that Negroes in America are just like us. We must look at them understanding the exact racial counterpart of what the man is, and figure it with histories and lost kings of immemorial tribes in jungle and fellaheen town, and otherwise, and the sad mutts sleeping on old porches in Big Edinburg woods, where just 90 years ago, old Roost come running calling Maw through the fence. He'd just deserted the Confederate Army and was running home for Pone, and flies on watermelon porches, and educated judges in horn-rimmed glasses reading the Amsterdam News. And the band realized the goof of life that had made them be not only misplaced in the white nation, but misnoticed for what they really were. And the goof they felt stirring and springing in their bellies. Suddenly Dizzy spats his lips tight drummed together and drives a high screeching fantastic clear note that has everybody in the joint look up. Bird, lips hanging dully to hear, is turning slowly in a circle, waiting for Diz to swim through the wave of the tune in a toneless, complicated wave of his own, grim like factories, and atonal at any minute, and the logic of the mad. The sock in his belly is sweet, the rock, zonga, monga, bang. In white-creamed afternoons of blue, Bird had leaned back dreamily in eternity as Dizzy outlined to him the importance of becoming Muslims in order to give a solid basis of race to their ceremony. Make that rug swing, mother. When you say race, bow your head and close your eyes. Give them a religion no Uncle Tom Baptist. Make them wearers of skull caps of respectable minarets in actual New York, picking hashish dates from their teeth. Give them new names with zonga sounds. Make it weird. Thelonious, he was so weird, he wandered the twilight streets of Harlem in winter with no hat on his hair, sweating, blowing fog. In his head, he heard it all ringing. Often he heard whole choruses by Lester, or Bird, or Dizzy, or Bags. There was a strange English kid hanging around Minton's who stumbled along the sidewalk hearing Lester in his head. Hours of hundreds of developing choruses in regular beat all day, so in the subway, no dissonance could crash against unalterable choruses and implacable bars erected in mind's foundation jazz. Now the tune they were playing was All the Things You Are. They slowed it down and dragged behind it at half-tempo dinosaur proportions, changed the placing of the note in the middle of the harmony to an outer, more precarious position, where also its sense of not belonging was enhanced by the general atonality produced with everyone exteriorizing the tune's harmony. The clonk of the millennial piano like anvils in Petrograd. Blow, said Diz, and Charlie Parker came in for a solo with a squeaky, innocent cry. Monk punched anguished nub fingers crawling at the keyboard to tear up foundations and guts of jazz from the big master box. To make Charlie Parker hear his cry and sigh, to jar the orchestra into vibrations, to elicit gloom from the doom of the black piano. He stared down wild-eyed at his keys like a matador at the bull's head. Groan, drunken figures shaded in the weaving background, tottering. The boys didn't care, because on cold corners they stood, three backs to one another, facing all the winds, bent, lips don't care, miserable, cold, and broke, waiting like witch doctors, saying, everything belongs to me because I am poor. Like 12th century monks high in winter belfries of the Gothic organ, they wild-eyed were listening to their own wild sound, which was heralding a new age of music that would eventually require symphonies, schools, centuries of technique, declines and falls of master ripe styles, the Dixieland of Louis Armstrong 16 in New Orleans and the Big Pops Forest, Jim in the white shirt wailing at a big scarred bass in raunchy, nongry New Orleans, on South Rampart Street, famous for parades, and old Perdido Street. All that was mud in the river Mississippi, pasts of 1910 gold rings, derby hats of workers. Soon enough, it would leap and fill the gay 20s like champagne in a glass. Pop. And crawl up to the 30s with tired Rudy Valleys lamenting what Louis had laughed in a 20s transoceanic jazz. Sick and tired early Ethel Mermans and old beat bedsprings creaking in that stormy weather blues when people lay in bed all day and moaned and had it good. The world of the United States was tired of being poor and low and gloomy in a line. Swing erupted as the Depression began to crack. It was the year marijuana was made illegal, 1937. Young teenagers took to the first restraint, the second, the third. Some still wandered on hobo trains. Lost boys of the 30s numbered in the hundreds of thousands. Salvation armies put up full houses every night, and some were 10 years old. Teenagers, alienated from their parents who have suddenly returned to work and for good to get rid of that damn old mud of the river and tear the rose vine off the porch and paint the porch white and cut the trees down and castrate the hedges, burn the leaves, build a wire fence, get up an antenna, listen. The alienated teenager in the 20th century, finally ripe, gone wild, modern, to be rich and prosperous, no more, just around the corner, became the hepcat, the jitterbug, and smoked the new law weed. World War II gave everybody two pats of butter in the morning on a service tray, including your sister. Up from tired, degrading swing, wondering what had happened between 37 and 45, and because the army'd worked it, canned it, played it to the boys of North Africa, enraged it into Piccadilly bars, and the Andrews sisters put the corn on the can. Swing with its heroes died. And Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, and Thelonious Monk, who were hustled through the chow lines, came back remembering old goofs and tried it again, and zop! Dizzy screamed, Charlie squealed, Monk crashed, the drummer kicked, the bass question mark plunked, and off they wailed on salt peanuts, jumping like mad monkeys in the gray new air. They came to their own, they jumped, they had jazz and took it in their hands and saw its history, vicissitudes and developments, and turned it to their weighty use and heavily carried it clanking like posts across the enormity of a new world philosophy, and a new strange and crazy grace came over them. Fell from the air free. They saw pity in the whole of heaven, hell in their hearts. Billie Holiday had rocks in her heart. Lester Droopy Pork Pied hung his horn and blew bop lazy ideas inside jazz at everybody dreaming. Miles Davis leaning against the piano, fingering his trumpet with a cigarette hand working, making raw iron sound like wood speaking in long sentences like Marcel Proust. Hey, Jim. And the stud comes swinging down the street and says he's real bent and he is down and he has a twisted face. He works, he wails, he bops, he bangs. This man who was sent, stoned and stabbed, is now down, bent, and stretched out. He is home at last. His music is here to stay. His history has washed over us. His imperialistic kingdoms are coming.
Two things happened during the Beat Generation time. The Hucksters couldn't understand it at all. I remember having a conference with a record company, with Laughlin and the New Directions people about marketing Patchen's record. The executives of the company didn't know what they had at all. They didn't know how to sell it. The only thing that was selling at all was this Ken Nordine record. which was to us what Rod McEwen is to Ginsberg, a strictly commercial scene. Steve Allen got the same idea. I don't know how he formed his friendship with Kerouac. I was booked into the Village Vanguard, and Kerouac recruited the gig. They throw you out of the Musicians Union for doing something like that, but he went to Max Gordon and recruited the gig. He said it would help build up my show. Well, he was pissy-ass drunk every night, vomited on the piano, and made a general ass of himself. And Max said to me, "Look, I'll buy your contract." Steve was very upset. I said no to Max. Max started out in life as an anarchist poet. Very few people know that. Well, this started a thing, so that in every Greenwich Village coffee shop and bar for about 2 years, all kinds of bums with pawn shop saxophones put together with scotch tape and some other guy with something called poetry were like, you know, a blowing poetry man, dig? And it was absolutely unmitigated. It killed the whole thing. It had a terribly bad effect. There wasn't anything like it in San Francisco because we had done the thing in San Francisco. People knew it. People knew all about it, even though there was an awful lot of trash at the coffee gallery. But by and large, the music was better, and the poetry was better, too.
Kenneth Rexroth reading excerpts from Thou Shall Not Kill in memory of Dylan Thomas.
They are murdering all the young men. For half a century now, every day, they have hunted them down and killed them. They are killing them now, at this minute, all over the world. They are killing the young men. They know 10,000 ways to kill them. Every year they invent new ones in the jungles of Africa, in the marshes of Asia, in the deserts of Asia, in the slave pens of Siberia, in the slums of Europe, in the nightclubs of America, the murderers are at work.